From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 23rd day of July, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. A bit later in the program, we'll check the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. We'll get an update of crop conditions in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa from the state statisticians and check in on the International Switchgrass Conference. It's an energy crops conference. It's taking place this week right here in Urbana-Champaign, and we'll do it all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, futures finished the day mixed. September corn was up 3¼ cents at 425.5. December at 431.5, 4¾ higher. And next year's July at 447¼, up 3½ cents. Wheat futures in the September unchanged at 487¼. For the soft red, the hard red at 431.5, up 1¼½, or rather 2¼. The soybeans 2½ lower at $8.85¾ in the August. November at 9.03¾, down 2, and January 2 lower at 9.16½. The bean oil futures up 28 cents at 28.01. Bean meal at 306.40, $2 lower for the day. Live cattle futures finished the August at 109 and a nickel, up 60 cents. October at 109.87½, 72.5 higher. August feeders at $142.20, 2½ higher. September at 142.45, up 2½, and lean hogs for the day in the August, $86.17.5, up $2.95. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Well, great to be here, Todd.
Looked like it was a quiet day, though it was a little bit back and forth. What happened?
Well, you know, we had the change of the crop conditions. So we're looking for 1% increase. We got a 1% decrease that sort of helped our overnight trade. We're up a little bit overnight, not regaining all we lost by any means, but higher. We were higher this morning when we come in, and then when we reopened, it sort of seemed like the area that was going to be stressed with the cold weather and the growing conditions with the area central and southeast Iowa and northwest Illinois and central and northwest Illinois and central Kansas being the only ones that looked like they'd be, you know, really not seeing much rain, and the cooler temperatures sort of pushed us down for a while. And then later in the day, we saw mention of that we're going back to China, but if the corn took the increase, and it is going to be, you know, 4½ higher instead of lower on the day. But beans didn't seem to react to that news. They stayed down 2½, 2¾.
Oh, that's interesting that the beans didn't react at all. I guess they're waiting for, maybe they're just looking at the potential for purchases to be made. That would be based on anything that the Trump administration does with Huawei, I assume, going forward. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I think that there's talk that there was, I can't say it right, Huawei or whatever, that there might be some concessions made or to open up some U.S. markets to sell them some parts and to do some business with those. And I think that maybe had a lot to do with the idea. And if we could get something open that, you know, we know they don't really need beans. We're not the best price in the bean market, but we do have an awful lot of pork and a lot of hogs that would like to get fed a lot of our corn here that way. And we were just hoping maybe that's why the corn market came back a little bit on that news. Now, also along the lines, I mean, we are having a little bit of problem over there in the Straits getting oil through some of the stuff, and maybe all our excess ethanol and going back to processing ethanol could be something positive that comes out of this.
What'd you take away from yesterday's USDA crop progress reports?
Oh, I think that basically along the way, as we drive around, the crop looks better. It's still the question mark as how well can late planted corn and beans produce, you know, as we look at all of our university numbers as they go out, that we have problems. There's a reason we don't generally plant corn in mid-June to July. It's because it generally doesn't yield well, and we don't have the weather to do it in that way. And I think that I was very pleasantly surprised that they didn't increase the gradings, knowing what size or how tall it is. And that was one of the things we talked about before. Are they going to rate something good that's still only chest high In the 20th of July.
Absolutely. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
I think, like you said, it was sort of a quiet day, so not too much to say.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. That, of course, is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 35% of the corn crop around the nation is now silking. The rolling five-year average is 66%. 5% of the crop is in the dough stage. 10% is the annual rolling five-year average. And 47% of the crop is in good condition. 10% excellent condition. That compares with the previous week of 48 and 10. So it's down one percentage point from the previous week. 40% of the soybeans are now blooming across the nation. 66% is the rolling five-year average. 7% of the crop is setting pods. Normally that is 28%, and it's said to be in 46% good and 8% excellent condition. That's the same as last week. Now here are updates from Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota.
This is Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. Iowa farmers had 5.0 days suitable for field work during the week ending July 21st, 2019. There were some reports of crops laying flat and green snapping corn due to high winds produced from various storms throughout the state. Fieldwork activities included spraying and harvesting hay and oats. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 2% very short, 14% short, 78% adequate, and 6% surplus. Districts in the southern third of Iowa and the east central district reported topsoil moisture conditions as over 25% short to very short. 41% of the corn crop has begun to silk, 12 days behind last year and 1 week behind the five-year average. 1% of the crop reached the dough stage, 5 days behind last year and average. Corn condition rated 63% good to excellent. 47% of the soybean crop has started to bloom, 13 days behind last year and 9 days behind average. 4% of the crop has started setting pods, nearly 2 weeks behind average. Soybean condition rated 64% good to excellent. The second cutting of alfalfa hay reached 56%, 11 days behind last year and 8 days behind average. Hay condition rated 61% good to excellent. Pasture condition declined for the third straight week with 61% good to excellent. High temperatures this past week caused some stress to livestock. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Brad Medlock.
This is Brad Summa, Director of the Heartland Regional Office, covering both Missouri and Illinois with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. I am reporting on the Illinois crop progress and conditions for the week ending Sunday, July 21st. Overall, a good week weather-wise for much of the state of Illinois, as there were 5.8 days suitable for field work. Statewide, the average temperature was 80.7 degrees, which was 3.9 degrees above normal. Precipitation averaged 1.1 inches across the state and was 0.17 inches above normal. Topsoil moisture supply was rated at 1% very short, 19% short, 68% adequate, and 12% surplus. For the corn crop, the corn silking reached 36% this week, up 17% from a week ago, and compared to 96% last year. Corn dough was at 1% compared to 29% last year and 18% for the five-year average. Corn condition was rated 4% very poor, 14% poor, 39% fair, 39% good, and 4% excellent. Soybeans emerged reached 96% compared to 91% last week and 100% last year. Soybeans blooming was at 30%, up 18% from a week ago, and compared to 87% last year. Soybean setting pods reached 2% this week. The soybean condition was rated 5% very poor, 13% poor, 37% fair, 40% good, and 5% excellent. Winter wheat harvested reached 94% this week compared to 90% last week and 100% a year ago. Again, this has been Brad Summa with the Heartland Regional Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, and I've been reporting the Illinois crop progress conditions.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Some areas of Minnesota experienced high winds, hail, or torrential rains, limiting the number of days suitable for field work to 3.8 for the week. Crop development progressed this week given the well above average temperature statewide. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 0% very short, 3% short, 65% adequate, and 32% surplus. Silked corn at 21% was 10 days behind last year and 1 week behind the 5-year average. Corn condition was rated at 57% good to excellent, a slight decrease from the previous week. Soybeans blooming reached 47% this week, that's 8 days behind last year and the average. Soybean condition rated 60% good to excellent. Virtually all of the spring wheat crop had headed. Spring wheat turning color progressed to 48% this week, that's 3 days behind normal. Spring wheat condition rated 85% good to excellent. Second cutting of alfalfa hay reached 63% this week, that's 4 days behind normal. All hay condition rated 76% good to excellent, declining from the previous week, while pasture condition rated 73% good to excellent, falling compared to last week. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
You know, if you follow my Twitter account today, I posted something about the Ford F-150. This morning, Ford released a YouTube video showing an all-electric vehicle. Now, this is not a production vehicle, but it's a vehicle that is to come in the future, and it was pulling 10 train cars and 1.25 million pounds. Most producers, farmers, when I talk to them about electric vehicles, think, hey, does it have enough torque? Clearly, that's the case in this Ford F-150. It's related to the Rivian project, which is taking over the automobile plant in Normal, Illinois, because Ford and Rivian have a partnership agreement as to the platform that might service electric vehicles, and Rivian is hoping to make an adventure truck. I am at a Switchgrass Energy conference that's being held by the University of Illinois today, and these two things are related in my mind, surprisingly enough. So I'm making a line that excludes ethanol in the future as electric vehicles come in, whether that's electric vehicles, all electrics, or electric hybrids, and the need for gasoline, and consequently E15 or E10, either one, happens to go down. So those acres have to be moved to something else in the future, and we may be looking for ways to generate electricity to service the electric vehicles. Switchgrass may be one of those answers. DK Lee is here. He organizes the Switchgrass Conference, and this is an international event. Can you tell me something about the conference?
This is the 5th International Switchgrass Conference that we are hosting here at Champaign-Urbana, and also we're going to have a various kind of event through this conference. We're going to have a workshop for the, you know, how we can identify different energy crop and different switchgrass, and also we're going to visit the Energy Farm, which is one of the biggest research facility in the nation, researching about the all bioenergy crop.
So I'd like you to talk a little bit about this Energy Farm that we have, because you've worked at the Energy Farm doing research on switchgrass and miscanthus and all sorts of potential energy crops. How far along are we?
Well, in terms of the production practice, you know, biomass production, biomass feedstock production, bioenergy, we are getting closer. I mean, you know, if there's a market for the biomass feedstock, I think we are ready to move on. We are talking about not just about the switchgrass, and, you know, there's a, you know, we do have a lot of different landscape in agricultural field. I mean, obviously, every different landscape like to have a different species. I mean, switchgrass will be one of them, and miscanthus will be one, and, you know, even corn stover and then bioenergy sorghum and all other native grass can be, you know, good species in, you know, serving those kind of, you know, landscape, agricultural landscape.
So you said that we have to develop the marketplace for these yet before we move them into place. You're ready now. How long or what has to take place
for the marketplace to develop, and I may have laid out some of that mm-hmm. at the beginning of our conversation. Yeah.
I know in terms of the, are we ready for moving on to the bioenergy, yes or no, but you know, most of the bioenergy we are using currently all ethanol coming from the corn, but you know, it, at this moment it's just such a low price of the natural gas and the gasoline, we are not too excited about the, you know, using the bioenergy, but in the near future we're talking about the production peak of the fossil fuel and 2030. I mean, it's coming very quickly. You know, we need to have some alternative fuel. I mean, we know the bioenergy will be one of them. It's when we talked about the bioenergy, we not just talked about the ethanol. We can produce anything, I mean, any types of energy from the bioenergy, the biomass. It can be the ethanol, it can be hydrocarbon fuel, like a fossil fuel, and also we can generate electricity. I mean, we know we can generate the power and heat and electricity from the bioenergy crop. Not also for the fuel, and also we need to think about the future, the fiber too. You know, bio-based product is very important. All this, you know, material we are using currently, it's coming from the fossil fuel, right? And eventually fossil fuel gone, and bio-based product, all the material we are getting from the fossil fuel, that also going to be a big issue. I think, you know, agricultural crop and energy crop serving, you know, important in a niche for, you know, energy and also biomaterial too, actually.
D.K. Lee, of course, is a researcher at the Energy Farm here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and an organizer of the International Switchgrass Conference, which is taking place all this week. One of the folks that's attending that conference is Eric Rund. He is a farmer and has been growing miscanthus on his farm for quite some time, has some experience with this particular crop, and to begin with, had a different idea about how it would be used than he does today. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good. So tell me about your experience with miscanthus and why you have experimented with it on your own Champaign County, Illinois farm.
Yeah, we planted it was 14 years ago with the idea that it would be used for making ethanol from the cellulose. And that never really panned out. Never was a cellulosic ethanol plant built near me. And so in the meantime, we've been searching for other markets for the 40 acres we have. And recently, our best market is actually bedding for turkeys. It's for running a boiler at the University of Illinois' energy farm to heat greenhouses. And it's also used for environmental measures. They put this in a sock and throw them in road ditches where they're doing construction to hold on erosion. So it has many uses besides generating for biofuels, and it's better suited to generate heat, thermal energy. It's what we learned they do in Germany. In fact, a fellow there said, use this biomass to replace coal. That's your dirty fuel. Petroleum's a good vehicle fuel. Use your petroleum for your fuel, for your cars. So maybe you'll think of it differently.
So when you look forward over the next 10 years, maybe two decades, mm-hmm. how do you see ethanol developing along with energy, electricity, cogeneration?
It concerns me that we farmers in Illinois depend so much on 40% of our corn going to make ethanol. And as battery technology gets better, electric vehicles are going to become a reality, I think, quicker than people realize, which means you're going to take a lot of fuel demand off the road. It's going to be electric. So what's going to happen? What's going to take the place of that 40% of our corn? We need to be thinking about those things. We either need to expand our markets overseas. I know China imports a lot of ethanol. Many countries do who are short on petroleum. And that's a market. But we got to keep that in mind. You can burn biomass, miscanthus in particular, for half the cost of LP gas. You can't compete with natural gas yet. Natural gas is too cheap. But all of rural America runs on LP. It doesn't run on natural gas. So in situations where you've got a high demand for heat, like a greenhouse, like a hog house, turkey buildings, farmers should really look into that, because you can save a ton of money now, today, with today's prices. And we need to be looking at those things. What's going to encourage that is what's similarly available for electric heat now, or electric generation now, with solar power. Solar is very popular now. It's not popular because it's cheaper than buying electricity off the power company. It's because we have incentives to do it, and there's an incentive for renewable energy. And that is not available for thermal energy. Burning biomass is just as renewable as taking solar power. And we need to address those things in our legislation, as far as I'm concerned. We need to address the land we use for CRP, allow us to at least use part of that biomass that we grow there for renewable energy.
Eric Rund, of course, is a farmer here in Champaign County, Illinois. He's attending the International Switchgrass Conference. And on that last note, of course, you'll understand that the RFS that was put in place in 2005 is the reason that ethanol as a biofuel and other products, biodiesel, in fact, made from soybeans, has been able to be incorporated so largely into the U.S. gasoline supply. And that is a national legislative initiative. On this Tuesday, we're joined by Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Beautiful blue skies, cool weather, dropped down to 55 locally here last night. It was fantastic, and it's, well, for this time of year, seems pretty cool and, gosh, not too humid. How about in your area?
Well, it's going to be, as it's looking right now, just a pretty typical late July weather pattern all across the lower 48, kind of unremarkable. Temperatures have cooled off in the central and eastern part of the nation after all that hot weather over this past weekend. And we're seeing a little bit of subtropical moisture come up into the desert southwest and the central and southern Rockies. Some of that will spread into the plains, western plains, over the next few days. But Midwest and Corn Belt, just looking at some nice weather. Rain chances, at least through the rest of this work week, are going to be on the low side. We do see wet weather returning with better rain chances next week. But over the next 5-7 days, just kind of run-of-the-mill regular summer weather coming. No one hitting any extremes, either too cold or too hot.
And so we'll be minimal for wet weather this week. Next week, rainfall in the forecast, how much, where?
Well, I think the central and northern and northwestern Corn Belt areas are likely going to be in the area that's going to have the best chances for rain. We don't see anybody getting anything too heavy right now. 1 to 3 inch rainfall amounts are likely central, northern Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and I think Minnesota, probably the areas that are going to be the most wet. But we see the eastern Corn Belt, portions of the Ohio Valley, getting into 1 to 2 inches of rain. So nothing at the moment is looking excessively heavy.
Does the rain bring a change in temperatures with it?
A little bit, but not a lot. Temperatures overall over the next 10 to 14 days are looking to be averaging very close to normal. We might even say slightly below normal. So temperatures are looking to be, at least for late July, in the comfortable range, although hard to get comfortable in late July, even with temperatures not far from normal, once you throw in that humidity.
Hey, thanks so much, Don. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address is WILLAG.org. Again, the web address, WILLAG.org. There you'll find the Opening Market Report, the Mid-Morning, Midday Closing Market Report as well. And, of course, Commodity Week. That's our weekly look at the marketplace, recorded Thursday afternoon, and usually up on the website by about 5 o'clock each and every Thursday evening. I'm Extensions, Todd Gleason.